sexy, spooky bones.
Hello and welcome to The Skeleton Boys, a horror movie podcast. I am Rolando.
I'm Johnny.
Oh, shit. I think you may have a higher setting on your levels. Try that. Try again.
No, I think I'm fine, but I'll adjust. Is that better?
That's for, yeah, whatever you did sounds more normal.
Oh, cool. I slowed down the recording dramatically.
And welcome to the show. This week we are reviewing You'll Never Find Me. As always, John will give us the plot in five words, give our first thoughts, then we'll do a deep spoiler analysis. But first we go back to TV Corner. Again, we're watching another John Carpenter Suburban Scream titled Cursed Neighborhood.
Cursed Neighborhood. Which we have gathered at this point, this TV series is about a people that don't believe in hospitals or asking for help.
So every episode I wait, every episode it starts or sometime in the middle and I think, oh my God, this is going to be the best episode.
Hold on. It's like every episode it starts and then I'm like, ah, shit, I started it.
No,
I got to watch this fucking trash.
That's eventually the thought I get to as, but I'm always optimistic. I'm like, okay, this is going to be the one. I want it because I want to see what Carpenter saw in making this show.
This is going to be the episode that is finally better than the worst episode of Blood Red, and I'm here for it. Let's go. And
then it's not. But let's be fair, there's no terrible Blood Red episodes.
Fuck no. God, there was one season because they were like, why would we make another one? This is perfect.
I almost agree with that madness. That crazy way of thinking.
I am waiting because that came out in 2020. I'm going to wait until 2025 to pitch an American remake of Blood Ride. Yes. And I will show run the shit out of that.
Could we get Ethan Hawke and Selena Gomez and
God, I'm gonna ruin so many careers.
All references to our previous episode. Go listen to that episode too, The Cure. But yeah, this episode was terrible. I don't.
Yeah, it's just boring.
I don't understand. At least I thought like this one was like I felt like the previous episode was too much. Nothing happened. It was too much like to me like a movie pitch for the Bunny Man. So we'll see that soon coming out. He's gonna fight Winnie the Pooh or something. In some kind of versus movie. I kept like, at least this one had a lot of like drama, scares. Like doc. It was actually more of a, like a, it was less focused on like the actual people telling the story. It was more focused on like the telling. There actually was a telling of something actually happened to these people that that lived there. Now, what actually happened to them was absolute bullshit, like complete, like it borders on absurdity to hilarity.
The most fabricated story, like there's no way this was real. Like to a degree where it's like there's another cold open. Now we're getting into like having cold opens on these fucking shows for some reason.
Yeah,
we didn't even mention in the Bunny Man they had like this one recount storytelling in like 1950 or something where this couple got accosted by the Bunny Man who like ran his axe into the window and then they ran away and hid at a tree like 30 feet away and sat there till morning.
It's basically anyway, a poor version of the opening of Zodiac.
Yeah.
Basically all it was. It's all I could gather from it.
This one had, it is colonial times.
Again?
And a bunch of white people are trying to say this is our land now, and they're mad at the indigenous people that they did not portray at all. It's just like arrows flying and killing them. And somehow these Caucasian people are haunting the land.
Yeah, white people are bad.
Which makes no sense, but yeah.
Got it.
It makes no sense.
Manifest destiny. Got it.
But nobody wants to live in wherever the fuck this was. I forgot where it was at. US somewhere.
Suburbia, USA is where it took place.
Yeah.
No, they actually,
all the houses were empty.
Maryland. If I remember, they were driving in and out of Maryland. Yeah. I think it happened in and around that state, if I remember correctly.
And I like how the mom and the youngest daughter were like, yeah, we'll talk about it. But then the oldest daughter was like, no, I'm not going to subscribe to your bullshit. That's yeah. not what happened to our father. Like, no.
He was a very sick man, and we refused to take him to the hospital.
We did not take care of him. That's basically what happened.
Yeah. I don't know. It's cursed. It's a cursed land episode, and these people, again, it's almost like a copy of the previous one about like they again the land is cursed. They're moving in. The yeah. suburban sprawl is a bad thing. Maybe that's the meaning of what John Carpenter is trying to say. Suburbia was a mistake. Is that yeah. did I get to the essence of what he was trying to say in these six so. Episodes?
Because one took place in England, right? One of them did.
England? Yeah. No, I don't...
Or Europe somewhere. Yeah. Or was it Canada?
Canada, eh?
It was Canada.
Yeah.
But I like how this whole story just kind of takes place and they're like, oh, we're being haunted. And then there's like this drama that is clearly not what happened. But like the oldest daughter's like, I need to leave. You should leave with me. Mom, you should leave with me with the youngest daughter. She's like, all my stuff's here.
Okay. Oh okay. my God, whatever. The lines in this episode. Oh man, they were fire.
You know I'm allergic to mayonnaise.
You know I'm allergic to mayonnaise. That was part of the live delivery of that.
Oh man. And then like it's like this guy gets dragged into the woods, which I don't think actually happened. And then
we don't know that, John. We don't know that.
But he is trying to fix the roof and he falls off the ladder and according to the imagery we see, splits his ankle in half. But according to the woman, like, oh yeah, he broke his ankle and then he was like fine a couple months later. But then he broke the other one.
That's the best part.
Like, okay.
And then he broke it again while up on a ladder. He broke it twice.
Yeah. And then the strangest thing, we were asleep and I saw his back and it was covered in pimples. And then the imagery they show you is like there's maggots crawling out of these fucking pustules and stuff like that. I'm like, okay.
Because at that point he had moved away, right? Is that the...
No, he hadn't moved away yet. This was right before that. This is...
Where did he die?
He's laid up after he broke his other ankle and he's drinking beer in front of the TV and he's like, give me another beer. Or he says something stupid. There's like some dramatic line that he says. It's like,
so,
it's this. You ready for this? She's like, can I get you anything? And he's like laid up on the couch watching TV and he's like, yeah, give me a beer with an S. Which I'm assuming he means beers. But it's just like a weird way to present that.
Wow.
It's drama.
I just like that they show this really, like you said, pimply dead body with maggots coming out of it.
Yeah.
And then they cut to the wife, very serious. She's face has been crying, you can tell. She's like, the doctors say it was cardiac arrest. But I think the land, like, yeah. I think the land killed him.
It was the neighborhood.
Jesus Christ, dude. I felt really bad for this woman. She clearly wanted to believe all these supernatural things were happening to her. I feel bad because, you know, she's just her first home. And she seemed to have a very meet cute story meeting her husband, father of her children. But
it's also really funny because I'm sure people will be like, well, she got a payday out of it. I'm like, I don't think people understand. These guys don't get paid that much at all.
Right. Yeah. I mean,
here's $100 for your troubles. Thank you.
If that.
Yeah, that's the neighborhood. I don't know what else to say. Like, it's just randomly these same two or three colonial actors that came out at the cold open pop up randomly.
Yeah. Well, every Suburban Scream episode, I go in with optimism, like I said, but each one proves to be the worst episode. So we have
so far
one left. What is the title of it? Like, what are we getting? What are we getting ourselves into next week? That's
the best one, I'm sure.
Phone Stalker. Okay. Oh, John Carpenter actually directed this episode. Oh, you see, every episode I'm reeled back in.
Shit.
Once I'm cast out of this episode, John Carpenter finds a way to reel me in. I'm ready for this next episode. It's going to be the best one. Watch, John. Just watch.
I'm ready for it.
Carpenter directing? How's that a miss?
John Carpenter presents Blood Ride Season 2.
It's actually it's a happened. Prequel series to Blood Ride. Whoa!
It's just a dry ride.
Dry ride. Yeah. I'm interested in the next episode. I can't wait. Excited.
Which is unfortunate. We can't talk too much more about this episode. We basically covered the entire episode, and that's how boring.
We hit the high points. I think there's nothing else much to gather from it.
Other than they're like, the mother finally grabbed her daughter, took off, never looked back, and moved to the UK.
Oh yeah, that was a weird.
Like, hey, your husband's dead, and she's like, I'm moving to the UK now.
Maybe work took her there. What do you think she does? Let's just take some wild guesses.
hopefully, she's not a physician, right?
A dentist? Is that a bad English joke?
Yes.
She brought dentistry to England, I think, is her claim to fame. Yeah. What other terrible cliche jokes could we make?
Well,
about English people.
There's some sort of England colonizing Maryland or something joke there somewhere. I'm sure our history buffs that love listening to us will tell us.
All history buffs love the Skeleton Boys. So,
yeah.
That is a fact. That is a true fact.
So does Thumpasaurus, because they saw the t-shirt that I donned for the concert. So.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Hey, have you worn your shirt out? What shirt did you get, by the way? Was it the man walking funnily?
No, I think I got the same one you got.
Oh, with the animals or whatever. With the.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I haven't washed it yet. I like to wash these shirts before I wear them.
Ah. I've already worn it out. I'm very bad about that. I just don't want it. Yeah. Yeah.
That's John Carpenter's.
It's okay. You want to move on? Okay. I get the hints, John. Alrighty.
No, we can talk about it. Yeah. So you don't wash your clothes, even though we've all seen that one NCIS episode where the kid died, and then they're like, well, we can't figure out who murdered him. And it was like, it was actually the dye of the pants. You're supposed to wash your pants before you wear them. He was allergic and died.
Wow.
Based on a true story, one isolated incident, but, you know, don't be the second.
Is it NCIS, like the Navy one?
Yeah. It's the one that JAG was the original Jag-off show, and then and then they did the NCIS series.
Yeah, interesting. Mark Hamill,
like the dude that's supposed to be the handsome guy. I forgot his name. You know what I'm talking about, the white guy, the
Mark Hamill.
No,
is it Mark Hamill?
What? From is that his name?
Summer Vacation or Summer School?
Oh no, no, not that guy. The other guy, the guy that's supposed to be the younger guy. The younger handsome dude. You know, they always have like one buff handsome dude.
Yeah.
So this guy is in NCIS and has been on the show the entire time, but he was also one of the main people on JAG.
Off. Yeah.
So yeah.
Exactly. Oh, and JAG off. That guy. Is that show still on? No, right?
JAG? Off. No. It once they finished that show after like 4 or 5 seasons, then they made NCIS, which is the same characters.
I think JAG ran like 12 seasons. It ran for fucking a long time. For most of my life, they've made JAG episodes, I think.
I'm sure you're thinking about Wings. I'm pretty sure you're thinking about
Wings. Oh, I love Wings.
Okay, so it was on for 10 years.
Yeah. Well, I exaggerated. It's not most of my life. It's like,
it was on from 95 to 2005.
Okay. That makes sense. And then NCIS took over. Which is... Yeah. Kind of NCIS is more of just like a spin on. I don't know why I'm explaining this to people, but it's more of just like a show like
NCIS. You're never on a boat. Let's put it that way. On JAG, you were always on a boat.
CSI was actually the one I was trying to remember. It's kind of like that. NCIS, right? It's kind of like.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Pretty much exactly like the same thing.
Just not in Vegas.
Not in Vegas or Miami.
Or Miami, yeah.
Or Los Angeles.
Or New Orleans.
Right, New
York? I think it's New Orleans.
New Orleans, yeah.
Scott Bakula or whatever. He took over.
NCIS happened near a boat. <That's> about, but we're never on the boat.
Can you imagine having to come up with creative ways to always like murder somebody near or around a body of water so it could be an NCIS show?
Oh, man. That's because like the JAG episodes actually had some sort of like realistic quality to them. Like one of them was about some guy died because his heart stopped while he was working, and then you find out it's because he was basically doing like some sort of meth pill form, so he could like push harder and harder and continue to work. And then you find out the guy that was in charge of that squad was peddling these drugs so he would have the best squad.
Yeah, it sounds like my job. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Sounds like
get all those free drugs from all the packages you gotta throw away. And like, well, it's free drugs.
Yeah. No. I shouldn't say that about my job. But it might be true. but it's alrighty. Let's move over to our main review of You'll Never Find Me.
You'll never find me, right? That's the way they say it throughout the movie. I'm just kidding. Yeah. They not once are any of those words uttered throughout the entire film.
It's kind of like the famous Brittany Murphy, the legendary Brittany Murphy. I'll never tell.
Oh, yeah.
And
I'll never tell.
That's why I think that movie became popular. I mean, besides for the fact that, you know, Brittany Murphy is a, you know, one of the most like legendary actresses who did amazing work of her time, and it's unfortunately missed now. But yeah, she that was like the whole premise of the trailer of this Michael Douglas thriller they made together. She kind of did like this funny like, I'll never tell and stuff like that. And Michael Douglas is trying to solve a murder or something. But she knows who murdered the person but won't tell anybody.
Yeah, and Michael Douglas is like, damn it, that's the exact opposite of what I want. This is not helping me at all.
It made $1 million. It was a $100 million movie. It was such a simpler time back then. Dude, you could just make movies about anything.
I just want to bring up real quick, I think we should mention, kind of like Brittany Murphy, gone too soon, Chance Perdomo, who was really making waves in a lot of shows that we like, passed away recently.
Oh, yeah, he did. Yeah. R.I.P.
Yesterday, actually.
Yeah. Yesterday, R.I.P. Motorcycle accident.
Which is very, very sad. He was young.
I think the last thing he did was Gen V, right? A good show. Pretty good show. So.
I'm assuming he filmed part of...
Season 2?
Or...
The Boys. He's part of The Boys?
I want to say, because they were supposed to be a big part of the new show. Did mm-hmm. he? Yeah, he lived at the end of the Gen V, right? I think.
I think so. I don't think he died.
But
R.I.P.
Oh, that's so. Let's go back to our really titillating film.
the tits are hard on this movie, John. As John so perfectly said, "You'll never find me, John." Do you want to give us a plot in 5 words?
Johnny,
5 words.
Plot summary.
Rolando, drum roll, please.
Let's see how these go over. For You'll Never Find Me, coming in at number 3, Redbeard hates those kids. It's not the guy from Ted Lasso, guys, I checked.
Or Game of Thrones.
Or Game of Thrones, yeah. Coming in at number 2, for You'll Never Find Me, Wild Man doesn't own television.
That was the crime of the
episode. Yeah, I was like, whoa, don't trust this guy. And coming in at number 1 for You'll Never Find Me, Storm finds man's dream women.
It's an episode of The Bachelor. Very twisted episode.
Kinda, yeah. I just cast the same looking type of woman over and over again.
You'll Never Find Me. John, do you want to give us your first thoughts?
Presents itself in an interesting way. I think around the 20-minute mark, I was like, it's not going to keep doing this repetitive nature of, like, who's lying, who's not, who did it, who didn't. And then that's exactly what it was for the next, like, hour and some change.
Okay. So you didn't like it.
And then I got to say, I felt like the reveal was kind of weak.
You're unsatisfied with the ending.
Yeah, because it's something where I could have called that at the beginning. Like, to me, the way this movie is, it felt like somebody made a short that did really well, and then they made a feature out of it.
And didn't, like, maybe they stretched the idea too thin.
Yeah.
Would you say
exactly.
that?
Exactly. Because, to me, this is sort of like Jethica, right? Which we both really enjoyed. But can you imagine if they try to make Jethica into a feature-length film? They would have had to have done interesting things, not make it so serious the entire time, you know.
Right.
It would have been a really, like, I don't need an hour and a half of this. This could have been fine as, like, 45 minutes.
Okay. I see.
Yeah. That's where I'm at with that.
For me, I'm going to say I liked what was here. I liked what was presented to me, because even though I feel the story, like you said, is pretty, if you're, you know, engaged in this movie just a slight bit, like, you can kind of gauge, you're going to come upon what is going to happen in this movie, you know, pretty obvious.
Right.
But I think they did, and this is the credit to the filmmakers, I think they did a wonderful job creating tension and suspense and really a great atmosphere, because we're only confined to this very small trailer, and it's basically yes. a two-hand performance for most of this movie, right? But the young actress and an older man, I think they're both, it's just set like in Australia or something, right? That's what I'm gathering by accents. Brendan Rock and Jordan Cowan, excellent job. And I think I liked, even though it's like you said, it's basically like Brendan Rock gives a kind of like a very, you know, very quiet, sweaty performance, like he's hiding something, right, through most of it.
Yeah.
And I think Jordan Cowan is like, she plays somebody who happens upon his trailer in a storm, and she is innocent, but she's also like suspecting maybe that, you know, there's more lying. To him that yeah, he's lying.
Or she's also lying, yeah. Like, she's lying about where she came from, and there's a lot of, like, he keeps explaining, like, how did you get in if the gates were closed? Like, you can't just walk into this trailer park.
Right.
She's like, oh, I got drunk on the beach, and it's like, okay, the beach is like really far away. and you're barefoot. Like, there's like a lot of questions that she can't answer properly.
Right.
And I'll get more into when we decide to go into spoilers, because then once the reveal happens, I'm just like, then why did we spend a lot of time on certain things? I don't understand.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. So it's kind of like they're, I think it's really big. Brendan Rock looks, like you said, like he has a big beard.
It's red.
It's red. It's like he's sweaty. He looks kind
of
like
end of description. That's all you need to know. He's got a big beard. It's red. Bam. End of movie. You'll never find him, but you're gonna find him because he's got a big beard and it's red. He stands out like a sore thumb.
I like that it played with the idea that there's like this power dynamic, because it's like this older man and this younger girl, and there's something. Jordan Cowan, she doesn't really have a name in this. I'm looking at the IMDb. He says her name's The Visitor. And she immediately distrusts him. And I find that, like, and I was okay with the first couple of, like you said, like the first couple of times they were like, oh, I don't trust you. But like, oh no, you have a reason to trust me. I'm not being weird or whatever. So.
Yeah.
I thought it was...
Then that just kept happening.
Yes. Yeah. Now, I think it does... That idea of this power dynamic of whether or not to trust this man or trust each other, I think it's kind of played out too long, like you said. So that I definitely understand that criticism. I was okay with it because I was engaged with the acting and like the storytelling and like the way they, I was actually kind of impressed also the fact that like it's just two actors. You can, this could almost be like a play, you know, a play between two people. And I thought there was really good chemistry between them. And I thought the filmmaking was actually really well done and executed. So there was like this terror and suspense. So
yes.
I would say before we don't have to get to the ending yet, but I would say I understand that the reveal was like not a surprise, and like I totally get that. Like,
well, it's not just not a surprise, but it's more of also there's a lot of like time put into confused acts that people go through where it's like, then why did that happen? Why were we so hyper focused on that? Like, there's a lot of things that need to be revealed, like, oh, the earring, or oh, like, you look familiar, and I'm like, okay,
kind of like false alarms. So, right, like kind of like not false alarms,
like red herrings.
Yeah,
like
there you go. Yeah,
well, not even that, like,
it's just too many,
you know, trying to tease. Like, there's going to be a twist or whatever. But I don't know how necessary. That's what I mean. It feels like fluff to, like, get towards the end.
Right.
Because I feel like we should have... If the ending was something different, then maybe it would have worked, in my opinion. But then having two different perspectives, and we're mostly following her perspective, which kind of doesn't make sense for the end to me.
Okay.
You know,
I don't disagree with you. I would just, the only thing, I would make an argument that I would put, let's see, how can I say this without like spoiling it before we get into spoilers? Did you find the filmmaking effective? Would be my question to you, like, but what it was trying to convey. That's the argument I would ask.
I did like that aspect of it. I thought that was pretty good. I maybe my gripe is with the writing.
Okay. Because I think that I found, even though I wasn't surprised by the ending, I found the ending, the filmmaking, and what it was trying to say and convey was extremely effective. Like, I thought it really worked for what it was.
Yeah.
So my thing is also like, I don't want to, I like, and I think I find what I'm trying to say is like, I think people might, I think sometimes people like, when things are a mystery like this, when things are kind of built up and you're waiting for like something to end, like so many, yeah. And then not necessarily this project in particular, but other projects, like so people are just like waiting for the perfect explanation, like a Shyamalan ending, you know what I mean? Like does this ending, is this ending satisfying? What I find is that like, sometimes that's not like the best question, because it's like, was this, did this ending convey what, did the filmmakers achieve what they set out to do, was kind of like what I'm getting towards, which is why I think I liked it. Cause I think the filmmakers executed what they wanted to say at the very end effectively. Yeah. I found it very effective. And I understand that like the whole middle part of it, which we can kind of get into, like kind of this, it did get a little bit tiring of like, do they trust each other? Do they not trust each other? You have like the earrings, you have the scratch on your back, you know, like it was like kind of like too much, right? Like it was drawn out.
Yeah. Like that stuff, he just not remembering everything, her not remembering everything.
Convenient.
And there's a whole parable with his father dying, but that's kind of a spoiler if I explain what I think that means. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say this movie kind of reminds me a lot of, and maybe it's not fair to compare movies, so that's not nice to do, but it kind of reminds me of a horror version of I'm Thinking of Ending Things.
Jesse Plemons, the Charlie Kaufman. And, Jessica Buckley. Yes. Yeah.
And that movie is like, I think, excellent. And the reveal at the end is really nice, but mostly because you're only following her perspective, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I guess I can't explain what happens at the end of that without spoiling.
No, I'll spoil it. It's fine.
So her realization that she's going through like a purgatory thing,
mm-hmm.
to me would have made more sense for this character if she was like, oh, I didn't realize I was going through this. Now I can enact what I intend to do. But it just kind of seemed like the character was aware and was going through the whole range of motions again. Almost like this guy is having trials and tribulations. So the one thing I'll give it, which is kind of giving it a little bit of grace, I kind of dig the idea that this guy committed suicide at the beginning of the movie. And this is his trials and tribulations.
Okay. Like his...
And he had the opportunity to amend himself, but he did not. Because I think that he drank what was potentially poison at the very beginning of the movie, and that sets off the series of events. Like, all of a sudden, there's an insane storm that came out of nowhere.
Yes, that is true, yeah. That is, yeah.
Which is reminiscent of when his father died. And I don't know why I gathered that his father was kind of a shitty guy, too. But that he talked about how he just lay there on the ground while the storm was going. And it was like an insane storm. And the power went out, and he was just lying there listening to the noises of his father's respirator going offline because the power went out and just dying.
Right.
Yeah, but...
So it's very, everything is very interpretive. Like, a lot of this is like a big metaphor. Would you say that?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Because clearly none of these people were ever there. It was just him.
Should we get into spoilers?
Yeah, probably.
Wait! No, stop talking, guys. Stop the podcast. Stop. Please stop the podcast. Because we're about to go into...
Spoilers.
We're in spoilers. Why don't you just continue that thought?
So, I think he had intentionally killed himself. the same way he had killed potentially several women by poisoning them, because he enjoys killing. Because he talked about, like, once you, this is very similar to Cure somehow too, where it's like, once he put himself outside of this box, it's like, well, nothing matters. It doesn't matter. Once you realize, you know, God is not real, and like, consequences aren't real, and evil's not real, good is not real, like, none of these things matter.
Mm-hmm.
So he was just kind of fucking killing people because he's like, whatever, it doesn't matter. And he's also admitting that he came to this place to be quiet and be away from people. And I'm thinking, because he probably didn't want to get caught, and B, he just wanted to stop killing people. So I think this was his opportunity to, you know, correct himself before leaving or dying officially. And it was just, he still did the same thing because it was just in his nature.
Almost like a,
this is where I get
sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, and this is why I get confused about the Cowan's character, because there's a lot of just following her perspective and her freaking out because she's like, what about this and what about that or whatever. But then it seems at the end, she's fully aware that she was one of the first victims, which you get hints at the beginning in the cold open.
Right.
Which immediately I was like, that's going to be the same girl, right? You just see like a blurred, foggy vision of version of her, and like it's raining mm-hmm. inside of a car looking out.
It's kind of like a...
not raining inside of a car. It's raining outside of the car, but you're looking at that.
It's almost like a... kind of like Jacob's Ladder, right? Like, he's kind of like reliving his life. That's why it's like...
Yeah.
Kind of like he's following steps. So I almost want to think like... So he for sure was... I think what I gathered from it, like... Would you say, you know, it makes sense and tracks... One thing I'll probably add is that, like, I thought a lot of this movie was like, especially the last bits of it, is like, it's all going through his head, right? Like, he's like having a trip or whatever, because he did take like a vial, and once he took the vial of whatever he said it was, some sort of like date raping drug, right? It was like
GBH, I want to say.
Just like,
or wait.
Something along those lines.
GHB. I made some joke about it. I remember it was like growth hormone something.
which I think is like a date rapey drug, right? Is that like the inkling?
I think so. I don't know.
I mean, you don't have to know it, John. I'm just.
No, I mean, I honestly don't. I don't know what that is in particular.
Okay.
What was it? GHB. You know what? Let me put this in private mode before I fucking look at
it. Before the FBI comes banging on your door.
Gamma hydroxybutyrate, which is a sedative that treats narcolepsy.
Yeah. I was wrong.
No, it's used as a party drug.
Party drug. Okay.
GHB.
So the fact that he...
sure.
You know, so he does take it. So this is like his sort of him taking it. This is like his trip through his own mind, half conscious sleep, and him sort of revealing what's really going on inside of him, right? Like that he did all these murders and stuff of these women. We can assume a lot of
which he explains. Yeah, that's what it felt like at the end, because there was a lot of bodies draped in different things.
Dead bodies, too.
In different rooms. So he does explain this drug. He said within the first... What was it? Like 5 minutes or 20 minutes, you get kind of loopy and relaxed with 3 milligrams of it or so. He gives specific numbers.
He did, yeah.
And like 6 milligrams, this, like, your body shuts down and you die. And he's like, I gave you 8 milligrams. So you gotta assume that he drank 8 milligrams too.
Mm-hmm.
Which in this world, the girl, which I'm assuming was his first victim, is forcing the vial in the bottle of bourbon that he was drinking and he is sort of forced, but coerced also, which I think is important to point out, into chugging the bottle.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then at the end, the storm never happened, I'm assuming. And you get a bunch of clatter outside, and he runs outside and he sees that there are actually kids that were fucking with him.
Right. Yeah. That woke him up from whatever. It didn't kill him. It didn't actually kill him.
Yeah.
But he, and this is the part that I liked, was that once it's like revealed that, you know, the visitor, or Jordan Cowan, the other actress he's acting most of the movie with, is like already dead, and he goes through with murdering her, and then the movie kind of turns upside down, and then it reveals itself as he is the one killing all these women, and sort of all the things that he mentions, that the cops banging on his door, you know, all the victims are coming at him at once. Like, that whole sequence was like excellently done. It perfectly kind of representing like his state of mind at the time, and all his fears and insecurities, and, you know, all the things that he was going through up until like he like boom snaps out of it. And then we kind of understand that the majority of this movie was kind of just him, we're going through like this trip with him or whatever, or he was
because even all the ladies look very, very similar.
Yeah.
And I think that is a reference to a line she mentioned earlier. It was like, well, you know, at the bar, we all end up kind of molding and looking like the same person. He's like, what are you talking about?
Yep.
She's like, oh, nothing. Don't worry about
Which
it.
Which we saw the, like, quickly we saw shots of, like, all these women's dead bodies all kind of there in one thing. Or they're all wearing blankets, too, passing them by. Like, very, like, think strong representative visuals were done to convey that thought.
Yeah, and all of them were going, oh,
I'm a ghost.
We're all ghosts. You killed us.
You get it.
It's like, no, I don't get it.
So,
just need my whiskey.
Do you think people would find that disappointing, that there wasn't more to it, that we weren't actually dealing with anything real, that it was kind of like a fake out, that it was not... Because you're right, because they do misdirect you, because we're to believe that we're supposed to be the woman in this is supposed to be the protagonist, and we're supposed to be like, oh, I hope she gets out.
Yeah.
You know, somehow.
Which she has her opportunity and she stays.
Right.
And then that's where I'm like, okay, she's for sure not like real or alive or something. That's the point where I was like, okay. Clearly, this is somebody like a ghost or something. I don't know. Yeah, I think what would ultimately disappoint people is the nature of the film just kind of dragging out. That's what I'm saying. It feels like it would be an excellent short film. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Like, this was an hour and a half or an hour.
Yeah, an hour and 30 minutes, 36 minutes.
Mm-hmm. So maybe just like a little too long for that premise. And then it's like the guy does die. You kind of hear him like fall and thud from the wide shot of the trailer, right?
Okay, yeah. There was a little bit of... So when he awakes, kind of explain it. Like, when he awakes from the kids like fucking around in his trailer, he goes outside, checks... laughs it off, like, oh, you know, I survived. Goes back in. We get this wide shot, trailer only in frame, right? And closes the door. And then we hear like rustling, and we hear like he like basically falls and dies, or like he, something happens where we can assume he's dead or something along those lines, right?
Or he's gonna die, yeah.
Or maybe somebody was there, maybe something else happened, maybe he killed somebody else. I don't know. There's a lot of... It's left purposely ambiguous, I think.
Yeah. Because it makes it seem like at the beginning he's alone, and then the lighting changes once she enters the trailer. For the most part, he is in a red light or in a red section. Even his beard is red.
Mm-hmm.
And for her, she's mostly just kind of in the dark or in a blue sort of ambient light.
Right.
And then when he snaps out of it at the end, when the kid's banging the door and he's like back at his table drinking and he realizes that he drank the whole bottle and he saw that the vial was empty, he's back in the normal color palette, the temperature that he was at the very beginning of the
Yeah.
Movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know.
Yeah. So what do you think about You Never Find Me? Like, you'll never find his victims. You'll never find his true self.
I think it's more of like you're just not going to find him.
Him, yeah. Because
he clearly nobody ever found him, and it took a bunch of ghosts and or his deciding to kill himself to get his comeuppance.
Yeah, a lot of people were comparing it to, it's kind of like The Raven, right? Like he gets a visitor in a rainstorm.
Yeah.
Which I thought was very, that's a good way to describe the beginning of this movie.
Verna?
Yeah, I agree. I think like the mystery aspect of it, like again, I wasn't the thing that I think the filmmakers were trying to say. I think they wanted to like get to the end, right? They wanted to show you like all these other things, like who he is, and then kind of lace those cues throughout the movie and stuff, which I found really effective. But yes, I think what's disappointing is that like you kind of want to see this young woman escape, right? You kind of are like rooting for her to somehow get through, even though. So it's like kind of like a fake out. So like if you're, I feel like if you're invested at all in the young woman getting out, and then you have like this other like turn on head moment, you know. I think that could be incredibly disappointing because it's like, oh, it's just this. It's not anything more.
I think, yeah, one of two ways. Either you're going to be like, oh, hell yeah. Or, you know, or it's going to be like, oh, well, okay. Like, why do we spend so much time feeling for her and her paranoia if there was nothing to worry about the entire time?
Yeah. That aspect of it could be divisive, I think, you know. For the filmmakers, but what I like is that the filmmakers had set out to say something, and I feel like they executed what they were trying to say, which is, I think, sometimes the hardest part, because filmmaking is hard. So I don't know.
You should probably tell that to you, Bull.
No, he has it figured out, bro. He has it all down.
That travel to different countries and just film whatever the fuck.
Take people's
wants.
Money. Yeah. Alrighty. Do you have any other thoughts?
No. All good on my end.
No. Alrighty. John, how many sexy spooky bones do you want to give it?
How many sexy spooky bones will you give it? Sexy bones.
Don't do that. Just rate the movie.
I'm going to give You'll Never Find Me.
fuck. I don't know. 5.5 is sexy.
That is
bones.
So low. I'm surprised. Yep. You didn't get much enjoyment out of it? Not to critique your rating. That's you.
You know what's funny is like I was able to really lock in and watch this movie more than I was able to lock in Cure, and I really enjoyed Cure a lot more. I just, again, I think like if it was a short film, I'd be like, oh, that was pretty good. That was fun.
Yeah.
But it felt like another one of the victim of like, oh, we're going to give you a lot of money to flesh out your short film.
Mm.
And instead of trying to write something, they just wrote around what they already had.
Yeah. I think that it's I really enjoyed I'm going to give it a 7. I liked it cuz I feel like what the filmmaker set out to do, I think they accomplished. Even though I think that they were wearing thin this whole idea of why would this young woman stay with this very creepy man in a rainstorm, you know? Doesn't like the idea of it. I think they stretched it as far as they could into what I believe is unbelievability, right? So, but I thought the other stuff that they were trying to say with the movie, I think worked for me. And I think that they're interesting filmmakers. It's like a duo, Josiah Allen and Indiana Bell. Indiana Bell, I think, wrote it. Yes. And there's like a female, male directing team there. So interesting. I think it's an interesting movie. I don't think they've done anything else. I don't know if that's true. I'm just assuming. Shorts. They did a bunch of shorts.
Shorts. Is one of them called You'll Never Find Me?
Yes. No, I'm kidding. no, this is their first feature. And I think it shows, right? But I think there's also something interesting here, especially if they continue to make horror movies. So I'll give them props for that. Cool. All right, guys, gals, non-binary pals, thank you for listening. And as always,
stay spooky.